talk a little bit about, some of the topics that we've discussed here today. My background is, I actually, about 6 months ago, I left IBM where I ran a social business for IBM. I write a blog on digital age of marketing, and I just have a real passion for digital and social media. And one of my observations is that, as I look at marketing and how much it's evolved over the past 10 years, it feels very static to me. The organizations that I see, it's often very, very similar to when I started in marketing, right? There's still the product marketing, and then there's the digital team that cares about the website and the company blog, and then there's the demand generation team, and then there's the guy who does social media, over on the right, what I really like to try to do is think about, how dramatically consumer behavior has changed and whether that's really the right model for today. I liked the last speaker who talked about how social is really the front page. And I think, as a theme in marketing, I think that is really important that we need to, think social first, human engagement first, whether you're B2B or B2C, and really kind of try to flip that the old traditional models a little bit on their ear. So we're going to talk a little bit today about how that customer engagement has changed. And so Chris and I are going to do a little bit of a 1-2 punch, and we're going to talk about, I'm going to talk a little bit about strategy, and then Chris is going to give some examples from his day job running, running That's paid right. social as a creative director, driving a practice. Okay. So first, I'm going to talk a little bit about, think about consumer behavior. There is truly no captive audience for anything, right? So, people aren't watching television, they're Netflixing, people are streaming music, I just read the other night that people aren't even using search on their mobile phones, right? They're just going right to the application. People aren't answering the phones anymore, right? We still have this B2B traditional model where, the telesales is the back end, right? People just aren't answering phones. They're not reading emails like they used to. Even LinkedIn, I think, is starting to get very spammy, and people are, we have a window there where people are reading every LinkedIn like it's from their contact or their network. As it becomes spammy, we kind of lose that window. My friend Gary Vaynerchuk, does anyone follow him? He's a riot, right? He says marketers ruin everything, and I think it's absolutely brilliant. It's very true. We sort of ruin everything, and there's this curve. And so I think success today as a marketer is really continuously evolving. And what worked last week might not work this week, might not work the week after. So here's an example, right? I sort of laugh about, maybe there is that perfect moment. If you happen to be Budweiser and you could afford, 12 Clydesdale horses and training a dog, and that beautiful moment at the Super Bowl, that's like a traditional brand moment. And, God love, right? If you're Budweiser and you have that kind of money, when I was at IBM, the advertising team had these massive budgets, that I was always jealous of. But, when you really start to look at the way people interact with brands and what they really care about, was it, your last brand that you learned about or the last product that you bought, was it through an ad or was it a friend told you that you needed, a new product or that something was cool or that something was new and was a great product? More often than not today, it's not going to be through an ad. It's not a banner ad. It's not a mobile text. It's not a telephone call. It's not a television ad. More often than next, you heard about it from a friend or someone you care about in your network. So, for the rest of us who don't have those massive ad budgets, my premise is that it's really all about gaining attention on this attention grid, really getting people to pay attention to you. And that, to me, is, very, very hard work and kind of what I lose sleep about at night. So here's an example that I use to kind of illustrate this point about, advertising not working anymore. One day I was coming up from the subway, and, as I'm sure you could all give your own story, as you walk up from the subway, people are handing you flyers, and they're always trying to hand you stuff, market you something. And, of course, you're just, no. And one day someone was actually standing there handing out money. And I walked right by, like, no. And then afterwards I thought, well, I guess I could have accepted money, but... It's that, that reaction is so, is just so ingrained in us. And I think when you really think about that, a lot of what we do in marketing, you're just tuning out, right? I mean, how annoyed are you when somebody flashes up a mobile text ad, right? When you're trying to, like, change the Pandora station, you can't because the goddamn, mobile ad is in front of you, right? So, how effective is that? And when you really look at your media budgets, how much of your overall marketing budget are you really spending on a lot of that traditional media, you know, just because? And this, I love this example. I found this example on the internet, and it kind of shows that kind of the same thing. Like, think of all the poor marketers spending all that ad budget, right? And no one's even looking at those ads. I mean, when was the last time you looked on the right side, you know, of the Google search bar, right? I mean, just not even, you know, it's like wallpaper for the internet, right? So same kind of phenomenon that, you know, think through, you know, advertising versus, you know, versus human to human. So the premise here is that, you know, social advocacy is really the last vehicle for authentic reach, for authentic brand reach. People have just completely tuned out brand messages and really, you know, almost have this alarm, I think, that goes off. Like, you know, it's sort of that feeling you get when, you know, you meet a used car salesman, like, you know, that they're selling. And I think that today just doesn't work with today's, you know, today's environment. So think about, I'm just going to talk about a couple analogies to just bring this home a little bit. You know, old branding, I would say, is, you know, is like an apple, right? You had this, we spent a lot of times crafting just that perfect message and that perfect, you know, brand identity and you know, all the visuals were absolutely, everything had to be crisp and on message. And you developed this beautiful brand, you know, brand and value proposition. And you were very worried about, you know, anyone deviating from the message. Everything had to go through 3 layers of legal review. And your brand steward would have to look at everything and make sure it's on point. You know, moving forward, think about new branding. I would say it's more like a bag of marbles, right? More often than not, you didn't hear about the brand from the brand. You heard about it from someone else. So it's more similar to like a bag of marbles, where it's the collective impression of your employees, your customers, your network, your influencers, your partners, and what they're saying about the brand. So it's not so perfect anymore. But the good news that, you know, is I think that amplification opportunity is so much greater. We talked a little bit about bringing influencers in, and I think done in an organic way, you can really increase the power and the reach, you know, the reach of that brand. And so this, I love this slide. For some reason, when paid, earned, owned media came out, I had a really hard time with it. Like, I kept forgetting which was which and, you know, which channel is which channel. And when I saw the slide, I thought, oh, I absolutely love this. And the thought is, like, if I say to you, Chris, tell everybody how great, what a great guy you are.
I'm so great.
How smart
everyone.
You are.
I am great. I'm great.
Right?
Everyone, just so you know.
Exactly. So everyone pretty much thinks now that Chris is just a jerk. He's arrogant. You don't really like him. It's, you know, sort of irritating. But if I say to you, he's the most talented person I've ever worked with. Chris is a really smart guy. He really gets it. He understands social media. You know, on and on and on. You believe me. You automatically believe me because it's that second party validation. Same exact phenomenon with brands. But yet as marketers, we still spend so much time on that first party validation, on that brand message, when, you know, maybe what we should really be spending more of our time on is that, you know, really that earned media, that those people who are really going to become the beacons for our brand. And so I first noticed this phenomenon when I was looking for a Halloween costume, which is kind of apt for this time of year. And I was looking for a Halloween costume, and I really expected to see, shops in my area, because I was looking for a Halloween costume and ideas from different, you know, whatever, Party City. And instead, what I noticed I started seeing was people's Pinterest pages. And I've noticed this phenomenon on the internet more and more and more, that human dialogue is actually making it to the top. And now that Twitter feeds are allowed in Google, you'll see this more and more, that people's hashtags and people's, you know, their influence is greater than that of a brand. And so, you know, I think this idea of actually having, you know, this human network that is really the basis of your brand, and really driving out that message, as opposed to the more traditional advertising medium, is where this is all headed. And so Chris is going to talk a little bit about, you know, 10 ways that you could really
just need that.
Oh, okay. 10 ways that you can increase that authentic reach.
I'm a creative person, so I started an advertising agency working on apples. Just going back to the analogy, so I worked on making things really nice and precious. And then over the last few years, I've turned into more of the bag of marbles, because I think it's more interesting and more fun. So I am in transition as well, and learning so much about, you know, what makes social tick. We've talked about in the last, today, I've heard a lot of great examples of so many ways and so many tools that you can kind of expand your network and build reach. And we all know that there'll probably be more logos on this page next year, and some might not be here because there'll be more tools that we can use, and you know, whether it's an internal tool or another social network. But here are a few ways that we think, you know, can really help you right now. Some of them have been talked about. The first one, actually, which one? Did I go? Yes. Okay. So build employee advocacy. That was talked about just 20 minutes ago. You are sitting on a whole bunch of ambassadors that can be do incredible things for your brand, and they're your employees. They're on the ground. You know what? They're a face of your company. And sometimes they're more than your C-suite executives, more than your spokespeople. They're having one-on-one conversations. You know where all your good friends work, and you know if they don't like where they work, and you know if they do like where they work. You know if something new is coming out that they're happy about, and you know if they're having layoffs. So your employees can be put to real great use. This is just a few examples. You know, you can use them to curate content, create content, spread content. You can use them as customer service tools. One thing that people you might be familiar with, a few years ago, Best Buy started the 12 Force, which was allowing their employees on the ground to respond one-to-one with people with problems that they were having with their technology. I think Sprint is doing a similar thing with Sprint Ninjas, where they're allowing their company and their employees to kind of engage with people who are having issues. Another great building employee advocacy is great for internal and external tools. So IBM, where Tammy used to work, they built a program to educate people on how to use social, to bring messages out to the public, and it's used as an internal and external tool. So their employees, it started small, as I think as a pilot, and then it has grown, I think, to, I read last night, somewhere like over 300,000 employees or something like that. So it started small, and now it's huge. Starbucks is doing the same thing. They actually, this Twitter feed, Starbucks partners, even though we can all look at it right now, that's really meant to their employees. So that retweet was Starbucks retweeting an employee's thing to their other employees. So that's like their internal tool to show their own advocacy and bring their, you know, and I think their baristas are all called partners. So that's it just makes sense as an internal tool. Hootsuite, I saw that was brought up in an earlier session. When I was researching just examples, I found it, so I thought it would be a good thing to know because they have a program that, and it's new, I don't know how new, last couple weeks, last couple months, but it actually helps you start and build your employee advocacy program. So if you're looking for tools or, you know, that's somebody's already on that. Oops, wrong way. All right. So another way to build reach, find your influencers. Tribe Up, everybody knows that there are people outside other than your employees who are the experts in your field. You don't need to know and find every single one of them. Find the ones that make the most sense to you. Reach out to them and see how maybe you can help. I think it's really important when we talk about influencers. It's not just go to the guys that who are on the top or in your field. This is just an example slide. I'm not saying go talk to these specific people, but there should be a value exchange in what you're asking them to do. So they are going to use their influence to talk about your products or maybe go to an event and tweet about it. What are you going to give them in return to kind of help them and incentivize them? And in some cases, it might not be cash. In some cases, what you're going to be offering them is better and bigger exposure. Another way to kind of build your influence, expand your reach, is curate others' content. Turn your sites and social media pages into not just news about you and what's going on with your company, but what's going on in the world. Become not just as a thought leader for the industry, but a thought leader for everything involving your brand and everything involving everything that you do. And by doing so, one thing that will happen is your clients and your customers will see you as an expert, and they'll start coming to you and seeing what you're talking about before they go anywhere else. And when they share information, you get credit. This is kind of like low-hanging fruit. You got to find people that already love you. I'm sure every brand, no matter how small, you have evangelists that love you, and you should research and find out who they are, because chances are they're doing a Pinterest page on RC Cola, and if I'm RC Cola right now, I'm reaching out and I'm finding out who they are, and I'm trying to establish a dialogue. How can I help you because you love me? I put this Airways thing, I don't know if anybody knows, but this is like a gum that's sold in Asia and in Australia. Whenever I've been overseas, honestly, I go to a convenience store and I look for it. So even though this guy is in Canada, I could have written that. So if they would reach out and contact this person, they would be, Airways is just a small way to kind of build their influence with somebody who loves their brand, and that person will become an evangelist. So this is, you know, find people that already love you is an easy way to kind of turn a supporter into an evangelist. Go local. You're doing it right now. You're going to, you know, small events, conferences. You're not just going to kind of listen, but to join in, to raise your hand, which is fantastic. Share stories, meet each other, swap business cards. You know, they're great. Meetup is a great place to find what's going on. You know, I would say don't just sign up and attend, but plan and help out. I mean, this is kind of grassroots, using, you know, what we're showing you, like an internet example, but right here is grassroots. You're going to turn to the person next to you and swap a business card, or maybe that person will become your next blogger or marketing partner. It just, you know, it may not seem like it's going to make a huge impact, but every little bit is going to help you. This was talked about a little while ago, hiring someone to kind of use that influence. You know, you found your influencer now, you want to help them, whether you want to pay them to kind of blog on your site, or you're going to push out messages to them and they're going to craft it in their own language. You know, that's something that's being done now, and you know, it's not a new term, but something that we do at eBay Enterprise, we have an affiliate network. And so if you're trying to sell a product or a service, we have publishers that we contract with, and we can put display ads and messages on over 200,000 sites. You know, these are brands you might not have heard of, Dooney and Bork. These might be like local, regional, or smaller companies, but these ads are being featured on sites all over the country, driving traffic and sales to the marketer. So what affiliate networks are, you know, maybe talking about display ads in a social world might be against the rules, but it is a way to kind of expand and think about how to get your message out in a new way. Personalizing and engaging, the great thing about especially Facebook and Facebook Insights and Twitter tools, every social network has a great way for you to dive in and figure out who you're going to talk to. And Church's Chicken is a brand in Texas. Is anybody familiar with them? I've never eaten there, but great. So they have done something really interesting with their segmentation. Their messages, they've created personas, and they've segmented their messages to specific audiences. So the more heartwarming and like employee stories, the story of a guy who's worked there 25 years and a manager who talks about how she thinks about her team as like a family, those go to their older and core audiences, the people that have known them for years, whereas kind of like these funny little videos, Dak Biscuit, you know, using pop culture references and really gratuitous food shots with fun messages, that goes to millennials and younger audience. And neither segment sees the other message. They dark post. And actually, the only way I was able to find these was on going actually to their page, which I don't think many people will do. But you can even dark post if that doesn't happen. So they have segmented their audience. So if I'm sitting with somebody who's 20 years old and we're both on the same page, we're both looking at our feeds, we'll see completely different messages, which is a great way, you know, you're designing content that's specific to your target. And the results for them, their engagement is through the roof now, and they are more talked about when it comes to Facebook in general. They're more talked about on Facebook than KFC, Chick-fil-A, and Popeyes, so they are actually, you know, this small brand has figured out a way to kick the big guys' butts just using some personalizing tool, and that, you know, they're building reach. Something, because I'm a creative person, I like to add value in a lot of the things. To me, to build your community, you got to give people something they want to share. We're not just going to pump out, hey, you know, this is on sale this week. if you're in the Boston area or the New England area, maybe you know Stop and Shop. That's my main client. We just launched this pumpkin tweets last month for their pumpkin products. And basically the idea was, hey, we have a pumpkin. He's going to tweet out his love for the pumpkin flavor, tweet us back. We use daily tweets and shot them out through Twitter. And even though these were all organic, we got over 350 submissions, which is small, but it was so great for us because we realized that this was something that resonated with people and they actually would take the time to write a haiku about their love for pumpkin. For Mother's Day earlier this year, we shared this digital video card. It was a little 8-second animation where sparkles explode and it says, "Love you, Mom." And we didn't want anything returned. We said, hey, we know that 80% of people, probably now it's a bigger fact, you're friends with your mom on Facebook. And years ago, Mom used to want that card in the mail. Well, today she wakes up in the morning on Mother's Day and she's checking Facebook. Did my son or daughter say, "I love you, Mom," on Facebook? So we made this tool as a way so somebody could just click share or tag their mom and Mom would see the post. It was shared over 2,000 times, and which actually allowed us to spread outside the people that we were targeting. So it was a really big success for us. And again, it was a brand giving something that helped grow. And we used the research and the analytics to find out who shared it to actually dial in. And we followed up a little earlier. Actually, my story is the difference. This one on the right is a recipe post. So the first thing we did was we asked people, what's Mom's favorite food? And people would comment, oh, chocolate, strawberries, Mom loves chicken. And our customer service people would respond with a specific recipe that that person could try. It's like a one-on-one influence. You know, you talk about influencers as, wow, I know a million people. Another way to think of an influencer is one-to-one. You know, if I tell you about something, maybe that has a bigger impact than somebody really famous or somebody who's known as a great speaker. So we did this. And then we followed up with people who engaged, and they specifically saw that Mother's Day post. So we were able to kind of use the targeting tools on Facebook and make sure that not only our whole audience saw that, but the people who engaged with our first post definitely saw the second one, and they saw the video. This is always a watch out, but you know what? Not every brand, it's great to jump into every hot trend, but sometimes it makes sense. Arby's did this funny thing with Watch Me Whip, Watch Me Nay Nay, and they use whipped cream. As a little gift that jumped back and forth. When the Pope visited New York last month and there was a Giant game, I don't know if anybody's heard of Pizza Rat. It's kind of a little New York thing right now. So they combined the Pope, Pizza Rat, and a Giant football game into a call to eat pizza. It just worked for them. Charmin took National Coffee Day as a way to talk about going to the bathroom and coffee's diuretic effects on you. I mean, it doesn't work for everybody, but they jumped Krispy Kreme in there too, actually. And then Helper is always as a little snarky brand, they took an arrest and somebody got arrested for using hamburger meat and they decided to tweet it out. It doesn't work for everybody, and then maybe there are times when your brand shouldn't do it, but it is a way to kind of, you know, get people to know you and put a human face on your brand, and sometimes making people smile is the best way to build reach. And lastly, our 10th point, sort of keep droning on. When you have a community, everybody, that's your opportunity. Every fan that you have, and especially anyone who's liked, shared, commented on anything you've done, is somebody that you should think about designing better content for. In this example here, we took a complaint and turned it into a compliment and made an evangelist out of somebody who was very angry. So. A Stop and Shop story again, but in the spring they had this limoncello flavor and the ice cream sold out so fast everywhere. And here's a guy from the local Boston area who went to 4 stores looking for this ice cream, and he went to Facebook. So he physically drove to these, saw our post about, you know, go get our ice cream. We did a little video. He went to 4 different stores, and then he decided to pick up his phone and yell at us and calling us a bunch of liars. So you're liars because this stuff isn't in stores. Well, we saw this. We called our client. We said, find this guy, get his address. We went to a local Stop and Shop in Brooklyn. We picked up a bottle, a container, we put it in a freezer bag, we FedExed it to him overnight, and the next day, you know, at 6:30 a.m., it was delivered to his house. And then at, I think, maybe 9:30 a.m., we had a message from him thanking us so much, and he's actually become a little more of an active person. So he joined our page to yell at us, And now he's actually more of, so this is a small, a very small kind of offline story, but we turned a guy who was angry with us into a compliment, and now he's part of, you know, now that was a great opportunity, and now we have an advocate and a fan. Oh, that took a lot longer than our practice, right? All right, Jordan, I hope I didn't. Any questions? Anyone that's kind of, this last slide just echoes the feeling of the conference. Everybody knows that social is so important, and hopefully some of these tools we walked out will help you, or at least augment, what you're doing now. Yeah, organic. Facebook specifically, now that it's pay to play, organic has been decreased. So we, what we told our clients 2 years ago was post 2 or 3 times a day. Now we're almost saying once a day organic. But I still think organic has its place. But just because a lot of it is paid, I think you now need to go with your media people and the people who are looking at your analytics and say, how are we going to target? And how are we going to make sure our content gets to the right people? When they started, we started, it was brought up earlier, like how do you get your marketing budget to, your marketing department to start giving you money? And when we had organic, we didn't need to worry about that. Now that it's pay to play, we had to start proving ourselves, but we have been, so we've been getting more and more of that share. We started with just talking to fans. Our posts would just blast out to fans, and now we actually, most of the stuff we do is to not, either, it's like audiences, and more like a little more of like what Churches is doing, where we're saying let's put this might be something for the younger people might like. Your content's still got to look good though, and still got to like resonate with them. Things that not everything I do for Stop and Shop specifically is perfect, but we try to give it some way to say like what's your opinion on this? At least this is what we think. What do you think? Or why would you want to share this? Sometimes we win the battle because I'm on, the agency side. So a lot of times I lose that battle, but we do our best. I think they both have, paid. You still have to have value. It's still got to be, why do I care about your message, and why, if this is showing up in my feed, I want to like it or enjoy it. So, or smile when I see it. It's still important.
Hi. So the detractor that was on the screen a little earlier, who's now a promoter, I guess you might say.
Charles.
Yes, Charles. That's my nephew.
Oh, really?
And he get.
That's cool.
And he gets it from my sister. So, anyway, just a quick comment.
That's awesome. That's so funny. Well, tell him thank you. Honestly, he actually went to 5 stores. Just to add to that story, there was a second post where he was like, and I just went to the other store, and you still don't have it. So it was so cool. It was great. This is like, you hear those stories, but this was a way to make social, at least relevant. And this is one of the ways we were able to show return on investment to our clients. To say like social does, a comment can turn into an advantage. And we did something a year ago where we posted on something and none of the stores had it in stock. And we realized that by doing a social post, we realized that they had a huge supply chain issue. So they came at us and they were like, why did you post this? And we said, well, you told us to. And then they said, oh my God, thank you so much. Because now we have a supply chain issue. So now all these products are make sure they're in every store. Before we even get a brief, that's set.
I agree.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that social media has made customer support harder, in a lot of ways, especially when you're dealing with like PR issues or I don't like you anymore, or why'd you do this to me type of comments. I don't have the solution for it. I could see a lot of the, I imagine a lot of companies are doing this where their customer service people are already, probably have TweetDeck, and in between answering calls, it would make sense to me that they're being trained on how to tweet, and how to respond, not just in a call this 1-800 number, like an automated response, but in a human way. I think that you can do it well if your company has a personality. And then people can understand it's going to take a while to I don't have a solution for it, but you know, one I do. I'm trying to think of the brand now, but there is somebody who will like automatically tweet somebody if it's off hours and say like, you know, our customer service is only open from 8 to 5 or something like, so that at least there's an awareness that, oh, I'm not gonna, I will get back to you, but not at this moment. That way you're not, you don't have to staff somebody 24/7. I mean, then it's on you to make sure the next day that the first thing you do is look through all the people that commented. But, you know, I think there are ways around it. It's certainly, yeah. we just tell our clients, please respond like a human, not like, you know, call this 800 number now so we can talk about your issue. You know, talk about at least, you know, thank you. A little more engaging.
I think you answered. I was just going to tell you how our company does it, and I think you touched on the answer too. I'm fortunate enough that I work for a company that, in part, is an electric utility. So we have a call center, and we do respond to social media in real time. But in one of our utility territories, they've empowered the call center, their best call center folks, to actually be responding on social media. But at the same time, we're also promoting the fact that that is not happening 24/7, even though the call center is in fact available 24/7 via phone. So it's like that message we'll put out, you know, it's 8 to 5 within the time zone that we're on Twitter.
I just had a question on that. I think you call it dark posting, or younger and older audiences on Facebook. Is that something you pay for, or a new tool?
Maybe yeah, I just never they heard. Were, I mean, it's all, I don't know their church's brand, like, I don't work for their brand, but I would assume that they're all, that they're paid. However, I would imagine if you can do it in paid, you can probably use their insights to kind of put your organic posts and make, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I'm kind of with you
there. As I'm talking it through, I'm like, no, that doesn't make sense. Organic is, but I don't know. I don't, yeah. I'm not a strategist, so I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
But they're probably, if it's segmented the way then it is being promoted.
Excellent. We have about 7 minutes left, but if there are no other questions, we can take a little break. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank
that was
you.
Excellent.